All right, it's Monday, March 21st, and it is another Let There Be Talk, brought to you by my podcast network, CactusRadioNetwork.com. Get all of my podcast shows for free on the website, At Home with Byron Katie, Dark Fonzie, The Grail, and Let There Be Talk at CactusRadioNetwork.com. Here it is. Here it is. It is episode 638, and talk about a legend. Oh, my God. Just, I sang all my life in a band before I did comedy. And I'll tell you, I did two of the hardest things in life. One is singing, and the other one is stand-up comedy. And, singing is so hard because it's your body. It's a piece of your body. It's your throat. It's your vocal cords. It's your chest, even your back. It's everything. Your mind, what kind of frame of mind you're in. Singing is insane. That's why most people don't even attempt it. I got into it because it was like, yeah, well, we got a guitar player and we got drummer and bass. You got to sing. And I was like, all right, well, I want to be in a band, so I'll sing. And in every day that I did it for 25 years, every day I learned something new about my voice, about writing lyrics, about melody, about endurance, about longevity, about vocal cords, health. It is crazy. You got to be a scientist when you're a singer because you got to know exactly what's going on with your body. Pay attention to the signals. It was like when I had John Mayer on and he said he had this vocal cord problem, and I felt for him because I was like, oh my God, because if you can't sing, you're done. That's your fucking job. And then there's these people that come around, and there's only a handful of them, where they are just the best. And my guest today, Ann Wilson of Heart, is one of those people. This woman can sing like no other. Perfect proof. Just go on and throw on any of their early 70s records and lose your mind. Throw on Dreamboat Andy today and just listen to Magic Man and Crazy on You and think about this. Go, that is a human being singing that. That's not a machine. That's not auto-tune. That's not fixing it in the studio with some Pro Tools while you go out and party. That's none of that. That is a flawless vocal performance of like Barracuda, you know, Little Queen, Kick It Out. All of these totally inspired me when I was young. I was like, how does she do that? How is she so good? To finally get to sit down and talk to this Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, this legend, was just an honor and an incredible day. And wow, what a great conversation with Ann. Talk all kinds of great stuff. Zeppelin, singing, of course, songwriting, Nancy, Heart, the history, the different band members, Cars. We even get into Cars. And I can't thank her enough. She's got a brand new record coming out April 29th called Fierce Bliss. Solo record. Great track out right now called Greed. Dive into it. Check it out. There's a video. And also, go see her out on tour. She's going to be out touring around America. I'm going to see her May 9th or 10th at the El Rey. I'm looking forward to that. Anytime you can see somebody at this caliber, try to take it in as much as you can. Get out there and just enjoy it. This episode brought to you by Buck Mason. I've been wearing a lot of hoodies lately. I'm at that hoodie phase in my life. I love them. But Buck Mason has more than hoodies. They've got leather jackets. They've got denim. They've got incredible t-shirts that I've been rocking. Buck Mason, just a brand new brand to me that I absolutely love. I've been wearing this green hoodie nonstop, and it's just, it's perfect. The fit, it's nice and fit. It's not all boxy. It's just an incredible brand, and I'm happy to have them as a sponsor. Get into their stuff, man. It is perfect. Once you try Buck Mason, they'll become your go-to forever. Head over to buckmason.com/Delray. Get a free t-shirt with your first order. That's buckmason.com/Delray, D-E-L-R-A-Y. Get a free t-shirt with your first order. buckmason.com/Delray. I love this stuff. And you've seen it in my Instagram. I've been wearing the green hoodie. It's got like the fat drawstrings. Just great stuff. It's funny, I was wearing it at a show on Saturday night. Somebody came up, is that Buck Mason? It's wild, man, that somebody recognized it. Anyway, buckmason.com/Delray. Get yourself a free black t-shirt or a blue or a white, whatever. Great t-shirts, great hoodies, great jackets, everything. Okay, what do I got? Shows this week all around town. Comedy Store, Laugh Factory, going to be out there working on the new material. It's feeling pretty good lately. Not going to lie, I've been writing a lot, and it's starting to work. Sometimes it crashes and burns, but that's okay. That's what comedy is about. Join my Patreon. I have so many bonus episodes. They're up there for you, and I do a live Zoom once a week with all of the Patreoners. Patreon.com/DeanDelray. Come join me. Support this podcast. Support the network. It really helps out. And I cannot thank all of the Patreoners enough. They've just all been so great. All the people over the last few years during the pandemic, it's just been fun to talk to everybody and have a good time out there. You know, we got some new Patreoners this week. Thank you for joining on. Yeah, yeah. Merch, DeanDelray.com. You can get all kinds of merch. Dark Fonzie shirts, those collector's items. Who knows how long those will be around. They're almost gone. We've got the Gertie sweatshirt and hoodie and the Perry Shaw t-shirt and the Grail shirt. The Grail shirt is fucking great. Check it out. I tell you what, I'm feeling pretty good today. I'm kind of jacked up. I've got some good energy going on. I've been taking this stuff called Super Speciosa. And what it is it's pure kratom. And you're like, well, what is kratom? Kratom is all natural ancient super leaf related to coffee plant that has been used in Thailand for centuries. Now, I don't drink coffee. I'm not a caffeine guy. But kratom is perfect because I don't get all like, you know, cuckoo. It just got my brain cooking. I feel nice and relaxed, but I've got energy. You know, it's not like that. Super Specioso has only one ingredient. It's pure kratom leaf. You got to try this stuff out. I take it before I go to the gym, or I take it in the morning, start my day. I took it today. I feel fantastic. For beginners, I recommend capsules. That's what I've been taking. Really good. Recommend the green strains. They're the most popular. They've got a few different strains. 100% satisfaction or your money back. So you got nothing to lose. Kratom. Yes, try it. I don't steer you wrong. I'm taking it. I love it. I feel good. I've got good energy. My brain is working. Try Kratom now and get 20% off. Get superleaf.com/Delray and get 20% off with the promo code Delray. That's getsuperleaf.com/Delray and use the promo code Delray for 20% off. I love this stuff. I'm not jittery. I feel good, and I've got some pure kind of organic energy. And at 56, I need all the energy I can get. Anyway, I love all you guys. I'm in a good mood today. Ann Wilson put me there. She just came on the show and just fucking rocked it. I loved it. Have a good day, guys. Have a good week. Subscribe and rate and review on iTunes. Check out the YouTube channel. Candles are lit. Here she is, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Ann Wilson of Heart. Here we are. Wow.
Okay.
Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Ann Wilson. How the hell are you? I can't even tell you how fired up I am to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Thanks very much.
First of all, you were absolutely my enemy growing up because I sang in a band and they were like, when you first start, we didn't have our own tunes. They go, okay, here's the songs we're going to do. And Barracuda was on there. And I'm only a kid singing because no one else will.
Yeah.
And I've got to sing Barracuda. I'm like, fuck you guys, man. No one can sing this. You know, it was just... Your vocals are unbelievable. And over the years that I sang, which is like 25 years, you realize the older you get, how incredible that you are. And it's just, it's mind boggling to me.
Well, thank you. I mean, that's an awful lot of good stuff said right there so far. So thank you very much. It's as we get older, you know, like you have to treat your voice in different ways, you know, like, but I have found that the older I've gotten, the more my soul is open. So the physical part of it is, that's only one little part of it. The big part is the soul opening. So that's the good part.
I mean, you obviously were born with it because there's nobody that has that voice. But as you realize you can sing, did you sit down and take some lessons or figure out longevity as far as like warming up and all that stuff back in the day? Or was it just like, fuck it, let's just go rock?
It was number two. It was fuck it, let's just go rock. And the things that I learned along the way and for voice preservation and all that kind of stuff, just I had to figure out as I went. And mostly it's just realizing that your voice is just like any other part of your body. If you treat it well, it'll treat you well. And especially if you get the key, the songs you're going to do in the right keys and everything, you're not trying to sing something way too high, you know, or be somebody you're not. If you know who your voice is and you tailor the songs for that entity, then you're going to do better.
Well, it is weird because when you're starting out and you're writing tunes, you don't know about keys, what key is good for me. You just, back then, it was like, well, you want to sing high like Robert Plant and you want to be just a rock and roller. And then later, as I learned guitar and started writing my own songs, I was like, oh, I can sing so good in this key, you know, and then you start to figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you got to look at a guy like Brian Johnson, who just walked into AC/DC and they write like Have a Drink on Me or Back in Black. Those are some of the most insane vocals of all time.
Yeah.
And he's not going to go, nah, that's not really my key. He's just got to ride it.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's got to provide the vocal juice for his emotions, you know, and that's the one of the it things right there about singing.
Yeah. Yeah. The first time I saw you guys was Dan the Green. You were headlining. It was Dan the Green. It was Heart, BOC, Pat Travers, Loverboy, Ozzy with Randy Rhoads, and 415. Do you remember that show, Dan the Green?
Was that in Oakland?
That's in Oakland, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I do remember that vaguely, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it's pretty amazing to think because of the big 85 record and right before that, that right in there from 80 to 85, you guys just jump into like arenas and stuff. But there you were headlining 65,000 people. And it's funny to think like, yeah, vaguely I remember that. But man, I remember that day every band smoked it. Did you get there early? You probably don't remember. Did you see any other bands? Do you remember Bill Graham? I loved him. I grew up in the Bay Area.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Who doesn't love Bill Graham? I guess maybe people that got on his bad side or something like that. But no, he was really an innovator and he was just a great man. Yeah, I met a few people from that era, like Brian Rohan, the attorney that that represented Janis and the Dead and all those guys from that generation, Renaissance men, all of them.
All of them, man. And those Dan the Grains were just like, you know, those 70s and 80s big Coliseum outdoor shows. Those were so epic, you know?
Yeah,
you
think, they were.
Like, people were playing on 100. The amps, they'd have like 8 Marshall amps. They're all rolling. And,
yeah,
you know, the audience is, you're way the hell up in the sky, you know? And
it's
wild, right?
Yeah, it was very wild and big, you know? And some of those shows, like the Texas jams and stuff,
right,
in the height of summer, it was so hot in the middle of the day that if you're playing in the daytime, the audience was like, people were fainting and they were turning big fire hoses on the audiences just to cool them off and everything. And we had one guy up in the truss who was running one of the lights pass out and have to be brought down in a little cage thing, you know, unconscious. It was just so hot. Big hardcore weather things happened in those days.
Yeah.
All of a sudden the rain would come in right at the beginning of Mistral Wind and stuff, and everyone would go, ooh, Heart summoned the rain. You know, it was like really fun.
It's wild to think about those festivals, man. I mean, and what you got to see. I mean, look at that lineup I just rolled to you. That was Ozzy, like his first run through with Randy Rhoads, you know, and wow, there's a guitar god born. And then in the middle is Pat Travers. You think about Pat Travers now, you know, all those guys, Edgar Winter, Pat Travers, these big guitar guys that were, you know, Frank Marino, that were just huge, and they'd be on these bills, you know?
I can remember being on a bill with the Eagles and Journey and bands who went on to become mammoth classic rock bands, you know, just starting out as a bunch of baby bands stacked on a bill, Cheap Trick and Blue Oyster Cult and all those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Just arena rock in a 70s rock. You guys ruled the 70s rock radio. It's wild to think about how much I've heard Heart. You know, the Bay Area just played Heart like nonstop.
It took a while to get that happening, though. Heart first was accepted the most over on the East Coast, like in places like St. Louis and Charleston and places that were sort of way far away from the whole West Coast sensibility. And it took a while to get us played in New York and LA and San Francisco and even in Seattle, where we're from. I don't know. They just thought we were an East Coast thing or something.
Well, there was that era. Every band talks about it when I have them on. You know, you get somebody on from Foreigner, you get somebody on from BOC or Heart,
right,
or whatever.
Yeah.
And they all have this thing where, like, you know, we just couldn't get played on the radio. This happened to Styx, you know, and then some dude in, you know, bumfucked Egypt on radio goes, I really like Barracuda, and he started right. playing it. And the power of that, there's no, like, you can only play these 9 songs, you know. And then somebody else picks up Barracuda, and then all of a sudden, you know, another play, and then Barracuda's in all the markets from one dude that doesn't even get the glory, you know.
That's right. Yeah, it was definitely a word of mouth thing, because back then, when we were first starting out, there wasn't the whole big money political grease in like there is now.
You right. know? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's horrific now. Even Sirius XM, which is really all I really listen to, they seem to only play like the you know, 20 songs. And I'm like, come on, you guys right. are supposed to be the alternative to this, you know? And it's like,
right. Yeah.
I, you know, because I'm way into a lot of the Heart deep cuts. And, you know, you get these bands like Heart or Thin Lizzy or Journey, and they just play the same 5 songs, and, you know, it's wild, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the fans, I like to call them listeners.
Yeah.
They tend to be really excited and happy when you play a deep cut. You know, they're like, wow, I've always loved that. It's good to hear it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was watching a YouTube video of you. And you were playing a song, the Mutt Lange one, and you said, oh, I didn't really like this, but I changed the words and now it's good. But you could see the fans go crazy, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They're not as sensitive about meanings of words as I am.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
I had a problem with that one song, that one Mutt sang song, because Mutt had written it for Amanda to sing. And when we flipped around the gender, it turned me into somebody who was really objectifying men. And as a woman who had been objectified for years, it just didn't feel good to me, you know.
Right.
I was doing the same to them that they'd done to me, and I'm not like that. So, but the listeners don't care about that kind of shit.
Oh no, it's all about hooks and where that song takes them. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's what music is to people. Back to when they didn't have bills or a mortgage or whatever, they're just like, oh, Magic Man.
Right. Yeah.
Let me ask you something, and I wanted to ask you this. You know, you guys wrote some amazing songs, and then, of course, the label starts to, you know, put the vice on you. Different labels over the years of you got to use outside writers, especially in the 80s. Was that a tough pill to swallow? Because to me, I'm a comedian now, but I wrote music. And I understand you want to keep going in the biz, but there's this whole art side to me of like, I would never have somebody write my jokes or anything. Was it a tough thing, you know, for that 85 record to have all these hits and you guys didn't really write any of them?
Right. Yeah, that was very tough. Some of the songs were a joy, like These Dreams and
Oh, yeah.
Alone and What About Love, you know, the ones.
Great, great songs.
That we could sink our teeth into. I didn't mind doing it all, but there were a bunch of other ones that padded out the albums that were just, to me, had no substance, and they didn't stand the test of time, and there was nothing for me as a singer there. You know, I just couldn't get into them. They weren't enough for me, you know. And yeah, that was hard.
It's got to be hard, because you're going like, well, if you don't like my song, this song's not better. You're just,
yeah.
You know, because Holly Knight wrote it or any of those writers back
yeah.
then, you know, the dude that wrote a lot, Jovi and all those guys, you know, it, sometimes it's lightning in a bottle and sometimes it's not.
Right. Sometimes it's just wearing the artist down so much so that they go, fuck this, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, it's, I think after a while, we just kind of went, well, okay, we made the devil's bargain for a while. We had a couple of number one records and everything and all the money and all the notoriety and the videos and all that kind of stuff. But we got to move on, even if it means we're not going to be the number one album band. It feels better doing what we want to do. So,
yeah. Also, I do understand signing the deal with the devil. If you can carry on and do what you want to do. I know like one of my favorites would be like Sean Penn in the acting, and he'll do one film for the biz and do nine that'll enable him to do nine films that he wants to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Or someone like Clint Eastwood who will do like a blockbuster and then he'll do an art movie and then a blockbuster and an art movie, you know, and those guys have it down.
Yeah. That's how you do it. That's how you do it. Because you're like, all right, I'll do your garbage, but I'm going to be doing these three here, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, you got to play the game, you know, because if you don't, you're not going to be in the game, you know, unless you have some kind of luck, like a Metallica, where the fans were just so strong. They were like, fuck it. We don't need anybody.
Yeah. Or like Tool, for instance, they like their new show is just like, it's like no hits. It's just, and you hardly even see Maynard. He's up in the background in silhouette, but they're not selling out. You know, they're just up there being Tool.
Yeah. 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 You know, it really matters with the fans, because, you know, I know you and I know myself started out as we want to be this thing. And if the fans grab it and they stay with you forever, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. And we're starting to get to that point now with our fan base, whereas they've kind of grudgingly come to accept the fact that Nancy's doing a solo thing and I'm doing a solo thing. They know that Heart's going to play together again. So they're okay with accepting our solo stuff right now.
Right.
And it's so cool. It's just gives us all kinds of freedom.
Yeah. And I, you know, I had Nancy on a few years ago when she announced that you guys were going to finally play together again. She announced mm-hmm. it on this show. Play, you know, people went crazy. And I do fully believe in no matter what kind of battles you guys have or what it is, I do believe that if you go away for a while, like look at Tool, they didn't put a record out for years because they were dealing with some, you know, bullshit. But if you go away for a while and you come back, boy, do they want it more than ever. Instead of just doing the summer fair circuit every year, after a while, it's like, I saw them after I rode the carnival, you know, the roller coaster. It's like, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That turns you into a Spinal Tap band really quick.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Tool. I love that you do. Do you go see a lot of shows and do you seek out new music a lot?
I don't go to a lot of shows, just, well, especially in the last several years because there were no shows to go to. And apart from that, I just usually go to my own shows or Heart shows the most. But yeah, I go see them sometimes. I like different kinds of artists than Tool. I just know about the Tool show because I was watching it online, you know?
Yeah.
And, but I like Lucinda Williams' show, so down to earth, just so raw and rough, you know. And
Car Wheels is a masterpiece, one of the greatest records ever made.
Sure is. Sure is.
Yeah. It's funny to think about Greta Van Fleet, who gets a lot of Zeppelin comparisons.
Right.
I had them on this show when they first came around. And early on, or no one knew who they were, I had them on. And the reason I had them on was Black Smoke Rising was on the radio. And I thought, is this a Heart song? I mean, they get a lot of Zeppelin comparisons, but really, there's so much Heart in Greta Van Fleet's early EP and first record. It's not even funny, man. I mean, your Safari song sounds like you coming in at the top. It's wild. You got it. Have you heard Black Smoke Rising?
No, I have not heard that. I'll check it out.
Oh my God. It's so Heart, 70s Heart. It's great though that bands are influenced by you guys right now, you know? Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it just, in a sense, it is like closure for us because, you know, there are so many young people coming to our shows now looking for their roots, like to understand the roots of the music that they like. And so they come and they go, oh yeah, wow, 70s, you know. And what's funny is if you write a new song in 2022 and just do it naturally, a lot of people are going to say it sounds like the 70s.
Yeah. 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 That's so true. Right. It's just like, sounds like the 70s. Well, everything comes back around, you know?
Yeah, just slightly different.
Let me talk to you about band members over the years, you know?
Yeah.
Of course, the Howard Leese and that era of Barracuda and all that stuff. When you have different, you guys have had many band members. When you have different band members, does it take a little time to get used to their feel? Because I know when I would change drummers, or a guitar player, the band would be completely a different feel. And it's not that it's bad, but do you ever think about the old days, the old lineup, the magic, the chemistry of that? I mean, stuff like Magic Man, part of it is that lead coming in, or Barracuda, you know, the sound of these guys and the chemistry.
Yeah. It's interesting because in 2013, when we were inducted into the Rock Hall, was the first time we'd gotten together with the original lineup to play again after like 30 years, you know? And we got together the day before to rehearse because we were going to do Crazy on You and Barracuda, I think. And it struck me that the way the original lineup felt was so white. It was just so up, down, left and right. There was no swing factor to it. And over the years I'd gotten used to, because I identify as a singer with the rhythm section so much, I'd gotten used to Denny Carmassi on drums, who's an amazing drummer and just has this swing factor just going. And then later on, Denny Fongheiser, who's a great percussionist, and he's got even more, you know. And now I'm working with Sean T. Lane from Seattle, who's this young guy who's just all over it. And it just keeps getting more and more and more swing to it. So to go back to the original lineup and feel this kind of Germanic swingless thing that we had, it was cool for then, but it's not butt moving music as much.
Well, it's a rigid rock, you know, it's a really like a dun da ka dun da dun da ka dun, you know,
right.
Like
yeah.
Kind of Zeppelin-y, you know, immigrant song kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny how everybody can interpret your songs different. You know, I saw you guys with Gilby and I think Mike Inez. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That was a cool band.
Yeah. Sierra Mountain Winery up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there you got a guy from GNR and you got a guy from Alice in Chains and
right?
It was killing, you know?
Yeah. That was a cool band. It was one of the more esoteric lineups that Hart has had. And Mikey is such a bass player, and he's always just struggling to get out of that rigid rock thing. He's always sliding around, and it's just, you know, as a bass player, he's just so fluid and kind of nuts, you know.
You couldn't have a better human.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Oh, he plays in my AC/DC tribute once a year, and. Yeah. What I love about him is he's like me. He just shows up and he's like, isn't this great? I mean, this is fantastic.
He's got such a good attitude.
Oh, God.
And he's probably got the best comedic timing of any bass player I've ever known. You know, I mean, he can say things at the right moment that just tears everybody up, you know?
Yeah. 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 I love that you guys were around when the Seattle grunge quote unquote era hit, you know, and then we're intertwined with those guys and every, you know, Alice in Chains and Lane singing on your record, you singing on Sap and the Love Mongers and Singles and all that. What a magic era that was, right?
Yes, it was. It was, there was a lot of darkness to it, but there was also just as much magic, you know?
Yeah.
Those years gave us a lot too, because we had just come off of the whole 80s thing, the how artificial can you be? Like, you know, the 80s was all about artificiality, and that's what was fun about it. But coming down off of that into the grunge era really, really was like healing for me. Because I'm a rocker, you know, like, and I can't hold that fake pose. I just can't do it. It's not enough for me.
Well, also the brutality of the industry and the pressure of the weight and the looks, you know, you got to be skinny. You got to look like this. And this is what Vixen looks like. And this is what this band looks like. And then grunge comes along and it's like, we don't give a fuck what we look like. What's it sound like? What's it feel like? You know? And then you go,
exactly.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's gotta be an amazing weight off your shoulders, you know?
Yeah. Huge.
I love also that Alice in Chains was just, you know, Man in the Box. And they're like, we're not going to be put in a box by Man in the Box. Here's an acoustic EP. You know,
then
it's like we're letting our fans know, hey, you better take the ride, man, like Zeppelin 3, you know?
Yeah, right. It was very cool. And just especially meeting all those guys, like the Pearl Jam guys, like we used to go see them in Seattle when they were still called Mookie Blaylock and watching them evolve, you know, and first meeting Ed Vedder when he was just like this shy little surfer guy from San Diego, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And so cool the way it all evolved.
Yeah. And especially when you got a guy like Andrew Wood, that's really spilling it out. For
Just be
yourself, man. Who cares? I'm going to wear a furry jacket and big glasses. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
He was the god to me.
Yeah. That was like maybe the first real blow when he passed. I don't think anyone really expected that, you know, and just knocked the wind out of everybody.
Yeah.
Of course, there were more blows to come, but that was the first one I can really remember.
Well, when something's that real, those songs are coming from somewhere. You can't make those songs up, you know?
Well, it sure drew the whole community together.
Yeah.
Because they, the community loved the music and did the music and shared. And then when somebody died, it really brought people tighter together than ever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, we lost some good ones up there. We lost, yeah. You know, we lost all of them really, except for Eddie, you know?
Yeah.
It's wild, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes I think me and Eddie are the only two lead singers from Seattle that are still alive at this point.
Yeah. Right out of the scenes. Yeah.
Right.
Seattle's a magic place, man. I do comedy up there. I love the Paramount Theater, you know, mm-hmm. I love the Moore Theater.
Yeah.
I love all those, you know, just the, there's a rock vibe in there. It's funny. I finally went to Hendrix grave. I didn't realize it was so far out of town. I'm like, this isn't Seattle. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's out in Redmond, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You walk up, it's like, whoom, it's like this cool thing, you know? And
yeah.
But yeah. Seattle, are you still there?
No, I'm not.
Oh yeah.
I was, I moved down to Florida.
Oh, wow.
About 4 or 5 years ago. And, I'm now living in the land of Lynyrd Skynyrd and Tom Petty.
Oh, wow. Was that a tax thing or just a heat thing?
No, my husband and I are both from Seattle, and we both got tired at the same moment almost of the 9 or 10 months of dreariness that you live with there. And we wanted some place to come and live on the water and be able to sit outside in the evening and, you know, enjoy the warmth. And it was hard to leave Seattle and come down here. It was like culture shock, big time culture shock.
Politics wise, for sure.
God, yes.
Right?
Woo!
Especially boy, what's going on right now, you know?
Oh, yeah. 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 It's funny because with this war that's going on in Ukraine, now it's suddenly very quiet here in Florida. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's like crickets, you know.
You had an amazing house in Seattle, and
yes, indeed.
I'm a giant architecture freak, you know, and I just love different types of homes. I'm way into mid-centuries and stuff, but your home was amazing there, man, and you had it for years.
Yeah, I bought it in 79 and I had it until 19.
Wow, and you bought it for like $1 in 79.
Yeah, I think it was like 420, yeah, 425 or something then. And it went for 3.5 mil, you know.
It was so good.
It was a cool place. It just sheltered so many things over all the decades, not the least of which was in the 90s, was the get-togethers that the Seattle community, music community would have there, because it's big and it's got big rooms. And I would take all the furniture out of a room with a fireplace and just put down a carpet, and everybody would come there and gather and just sit around on the carpet and drink beer and just hang out, especially when something traumatizing had happened and they wanted to just be together and not have to talk, you know? So it was very cool.
When something like that would happen, because I know you had a you know, history of partying, and like all of us. In
oh,
that
yeah.
Era. Yeah. 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 Isn't it interesting where somebody could die and you could just keep going yourself? Like, it's wild, right? Like, someone's gone. And I used to have in my mind, well, I don't fuck with dope, you know, coke is fine and weed and booze and stuff. But, you know, it's wild to think about how somehow you have to, even if you hit rock bottom, something happens to make you stop.
Yeah.
Where are you at these days?
These days, I don't do any drugs. The worst I do is I drink a glass of wine, one glass of wine, you know.
Yeah.
And I try to savor it because I went all the way the other way. You know, I never did heroin or anything, but not really. But, you know, I got pretty far into partying, and that big house saw all kinds of eras of decadence. But when my kids were born, I just went, nah, I'm not doing that anymore. I don't want to be altered around them, you know?
Yeah.
And so I eventually just weaned off of everything. I'm glad.
Oh, God, yeah. I'm glad, too, because you're here, you know? And
yeah.
I just watched a clip of you singing at Hampton Beach, crazy on you. This fucking woman sings like, listen to this. It's same key, killing it. I'm like, man, you know, like we need that around. Like,
yeah,
you're a lot like, to me, like Eddie Van Halen, but vocals, you know, but him, like when these legends go, you're like, well, fuck, we can't really, you know, talk to them anymore about how they did that, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's you know, I have a hard time with the American Idols and the voice shows and stuff.
Oh boy, me too.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest problems of these shows are they do not promote any kind of writing. And it, since Christina Aguilera, which I'm not knocking her or anything, it became this vocal acrobats. And America only thinks you're a good singer if you can riff. I go, if you come out and you're Eddie Vedder, pre-Eddie Vedder, if you're a Jim Morrison or something, they'd be like, this guy's terrible. Where's the, you know?
So right. Yeah.
It gets the wrong message a lot of times of not writing your own songs, and then you must be crazy singer for America to go, they're great, which is so wrong.
And if you're a woman, you have to be able to do that little dog whistle high note like Mariah Carey does, which is, to me, like, nothing against Mariah, of course,
right?
But that super high little whistle thing she does is really freakish. It's just like she's trying to show off in this way. The same way that if they get a great big boob job with like these massive implants or the butt implants or something, it's so, so unnatural. And I don't know why that's appealing.
Well, also somebody already did it. So do your thing.
That's, yeah, right.
You know, every 10 years or so, something really original comes along and then people go like, oh my God, this is great. And then everybody jumps on that.
Right. And like Adele.
Oh my God.
Within a year, every chick was singing like Adele.
Yeah. Yeah. She was so good. You know,
yeah,
so good. Like Billie Eilish, to me, I think is a genius, you know?
Oh yeah. Me too. Me too. Her message is just divine. I think it's,
she's
great.
Just like, fuck you. This is how I look. These are the songs. I write the songs. And I think more people should cling on to doing their art, sink or swim, man, because at the end of the day, and you'll know yourself, as the 85 record will tell you, that, yeah, it was huge, but, you know, you much rather do, you know, write your own stuff and fail than.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. It's always something. There's always something wrong with you if you're a woman, like you're too young, you're too fat, you're too skinny, you're too old, you're a woman. Like, there's always something wrong. And I think Billie Eilish is really the first one to really come through in a long time and succeed at just going, fuck all that stuff, you know, because the music is good enough.
Right. Well, that's what I said. Immediately, hit songs win over everything. You know, good songs. People are like, look, when I first hear a song, I don't know what they look like. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
I don't got a magazine and the song comes out of the magazine. I hear a song. I'm at the gym. I'm on SiriusXM. I'm, you know, driving down the road or something. A song comes on. I don't immediately go, wonder what this person looks like. What do they weigh? Right. How old are they?
Right.
I fucking think about any of that shit.
Are they a real woman or not? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I just think about like, the first thing I think is, did they write that? Because if they did, fuck yeah, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's so crazy, man. Let's get into a little bit about it. So you've got a new record coming out. Uh-huh. And, before I do bring this up, I wanted to ask you one question, because you recorded at one of the greatest studios ever, The Plant, when you did the 85 record. How did you like The Plant in Sausalito?
Back then, it was great. I don't know what it's like now.
Right.
It was great. It was just when you first walked in, you had to walk through a hot tub room to get to the studio.
Yeah.
And it was just like, that's how things were. Oh, yeah. If you were recording, you might just want to go in the hot tub too.
Yeah. Yeah. But, totally. Send yeah. some runners for some champagne. Right. It's right. I'm not feeling this song. I'm yeah. in a hot tub right now.
Yeah. Right. It was totally different, but like, of course, equipment wise and vibe wise, it was great living in Sausalito for that few months.
Yeah.
And,
that's where Love Bone did that record.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
The reason I wanted to bring up that studio was because I wanted to ask you where you recorded the new record and how during the pandemic, was it just over Zoom and over, Pro Tools and all that? Cause it's changed so much, but the record does sound fantastic. So how did you record it?
Well, we didn't do it over Zoom or by sending files around because I've never been satisfied with that. It just, you send your file around and what you get back is just this mountain of everybody else's ideas. And there's no spark there. So the spark of being together in the same room live, you know, and joking around and camaraderie, all that stuff figures into the music actually sounding alive and vivid, you know. So what we did was we went to Muscle Shoals Fame Studio.
Oh, wow.
First.
Wow.
Yeah. And, we just put on masks and got vaccinated and all that kind of stuff it took. And we got in the same room and we just started making music.
Wow. That's so cool. Who produced it?
I did with Tom Bukovac.
Wow.
And then two of the songs I produced with Warren Haynes.
Oh, what a killer.
Yeah.
What a killer. Yeah. How'd you hook up with him?
Well, a couple of 3 years ago, he started asking me to come sit in with Government Mule. And I ended up doing that 3 or 4 times and really got to know those people. And they're so cool.
Oh God.
Almost like extended family, you know, and Warren actually came and played on my last solo album, which was called Immortal. And he played on You Don't Own Me and on Luna.
Oh yeah.
And I loved what he did. So I asked him if he wanted to come back and he said, yeah, in fact, I got some song ideas. And he sent me this epic guitar track that he'd recorded. He had this idea. He wanted to write a song like the Zeppelin Rain song or something that was really long and went through all these changes and everything. So that became Gladiator. And then Angels Blues, we did together too.
Man, he is unreal. That guy is.
Yeah. And what a great human, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think he wrote that great Allman Brothers song, Soul Shine.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God, what a blame it on the soul. I just love that guy.
He's definitely cool.
His slide playing is unreal. His slide playing is the type of slide playing I like. I don't like that erratic kind of cocaine-y, like you know?
Right, right.
He's real slippery, just, you know, more like Dwayne, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
God, he's so good. He's so good. Now, I saw the video for Greed, and I saw the album cover. The album cover is really cool. It's got a little, now that I think about it, it's got a little Florida vibe there with the parrot on it and stuff.
That's Roger Dean. That's the
the
fantasy artist that used to do Yes and Asia covers.
Yeah, you could tell. That's what it looks like. Yeah, because the logo is kind of Asia, you know, and yeah.
Like, I wanted to work with him, and I told him the name of the record, Fierce Bliss, and he really liked it. And so he came back with this piece called Parrot on Ice, which I really loved. And we went to work on that and he, you know, juiced it up and made a really cool thing out of it. It's otherworldly for sure.
Yeah. It's really good. It's really good.
And we're going to release this thing in vinyl too. So you'll have something to hold in your hands while you listen to it, if you want to, and check out, you know,
when an album cover meant something, you're just like,
yeah,
look at that.
Totally.
That's a fucking parrot on there, you know. Yeah. They roll a joint on it, you know. You break up the wing,
right? Get rid of the seeds.
Yeah. I love Greed, but I also love A Moment in Heaven, man. That's a riff. Yeah, that's a riffy tune, man.
Yeah, yeah. Now that's Tom Bukovac coming in. He came up with that riff. He's a great guitar player. He's just so amazing. Do you know Tom?
I don't.
Yeah, well, he's kind of got a following all his own. He doesn't really need me, but he's a great guy. And he's right now he's the band leader. And I met him at Muscle Shoals, and I just said, "You and me we're doing this, you know.
Wow.
And he's one of those players that can play anything. I mean, he is just as at home on acoustic as he is on a Strat or on a Gibson or anything.
Yeah.
He's got an encyclopedic knowledge of all decades of music, way back before my time even. And it's just such a joy working with him. You should look him up. He has a thing on YouTube called Homeschooling. He's a cool guy.
When you started working with him and you immediately probably felt some chemistry and you're like, wow, I want this guy to be the band leader. Is mm-hmm. this where the friction came between you and your sister? Like, this is a great band and I want to use this band. Is that what happened?
Well, no, Nancy and I had friction long before I met these guys.
Well, I know that, but I thought there was some friction over
who
was going to be in the band for a tour.
Yeah, there is. There is. She's got one idea and I've got another idea. And I just think that if she could only get in the room with these guys that I'm working with, she would just go, yeah, you know, because they're on such a level. And they can just do anything. And but anyway, she feels the same way about the guy she's working with. So we'll work it out. You know, work it out eventually.
Absolutely. But, absolutely. And right now we're getting two versions. I mean, you know, one of the greatest splits ever was Dio and Ozzy. We got two of the greatest bands ever. We got Sabbath with Dio and we got Ozzy with a solo thing, you know.
Right,
so
yeah.
You get good stuff and then it comes back later and you're like, cool, we've got this, you know.
Yeah,
it's just life, you know. It's we're only here for so long. So if you feel a way, you gotta go out and seek it out. You can't just, you know, a lot of times people do the same thing their whole life, which I respect, but if you have regrets later, that's a bummer.
Yeah, because you didn't do enough, you know?
Yeah, gut feeling. You got to go with your gut feeling.
Yeah, and you got to take risks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, you got to take risks. Especially, I think the main thing is, as artists get older, musicians, they don't take risks anymore.
I know.
It's the same set list. And, you know, almost the same stage wraps, the same people. And you're like, well, this is just, they're not taking any risks. And I don't know how you do that as an artist. Unless you have something on the side where you can take some serious risk, because you need to keep kind of growing. Even if people go, this is terrible. Yeah. Well, I don't care. I've tried some stuff, you know?
Yeah. That whole thing of playing it safe and phoning it in, as especially veteran artists start to get on, that to me is death. I mean, that's like,
yeah, you already died.
Just writing it down into some kind of, you know, obliteration. You're not vital. You're not relevant. You're just taking the money and phoning it in, you know. No can do. No can do.
Yeah. you're a car woman, I read. You had Mopars, like Barracudas. You had a Cuda and stuff like that back in the day, huh?
Well, I never had some of that stuff you read on the internet is... I don't know where they get that information, because I don't have all those cars. I don't have a Volvo and a Saab and a Barracuda and a Ferrari or whatever.
Yeah.
All I have right now, well, in the past I've had a Jag XKE and a couple of Porsches. And
Wow. Porsches. What'd you have? 911s?
No, I started out with a 924. Then I went to a 928.
Oh, killer.
And now I have a Cayman.
Oh man. So, I love the Cayman.
Yeah, it's a cool little car. It's a good horse.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm a Porsche guy, 100%. I love them, all of them. 911, 914, 912, 928, 944. I love the Cayman. I like the new electric one. I like, you know, all of them. They're just, they, you know why? They got history. They got soul, and they're just part of us. You know.
Yeah, they're super well built.
Yeah.
And they've thought of everything, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
like this car I have now is probably smarter than I am. In lots of ways.
Yeah. I tell you what, I still think about that day that you sang Stairway to Heaven on the Kennedy Honors. Mm-hmm. It was one of the greatest things I've ever seen. And you know, and of course, Robert Plant teared up and stuff, but that, what was that like? I mean, I know it's kind of a cliche question, but I have to ask you, just because you're singing Zeppelin in front of Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And it's a huge influence on you. Huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what happened? Okay. How does it happen? I know you get asked to do it, but do you talk to the band after? Like, run me through that night.
It was kind of a 2-day experience where you get it, you go into Washington and you have a big rehearsal for the show that's going to be the next day. And then you just go hang out in the bar and look at Jeff Beck and
yeah,
and all the people who have come in who are hanging out in the bar, you know. And then the next morning you get up and they take you to the White House for a reception and where you get to meet the president and first lady and Stephen Colbert and, you know, Yo-Yo yeah. Ma and Dustin Hoffman and everything. And then they take you back to the Kennedy Center Honors where you have a run through, one single run through, and then it's showtime.
Wow.
And you do the show, you do your one appearance, which in our case was about 7 minutes long. And then afterward, you go to this big dinner they have in the Great Hall, and they seated me next to Kid Rock.
Oh, whoa.
So obviously we didn't talk politics, but you know,
yeah, yeah.
But everybody's there at the dinner. And that was when Plant and Jimmy came up to us. And of course, John Paul came up to us and Plant said, you know, usually I just really hate it when people do Stairway because they always fuck it up.
Yeah.
And I always hate it, but I didn't hate your version. I kind of liked it. You know, he's so coy.
I kind of liked it. He was crying. He was like, "Well, he's like, this is killer."
Yeah. Well, he isn't going to be effusive about it in front of me. But anyway,
yeah.
That's basically how it was. And then you go back to the hotel and your feet don't touch the ground.
You had to know you killed it. Have you ever had a high profile gig where your voice, because I've never seen you where your voice is not working. Has there ever been nights where maybe it's a little hoarse or you couldn't go to a note or anything like that?
Yes. Back in the old days when we used to do like 6 shows a week.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like sometimes I'd get into this place where, especially if I was partying, where my voice would get beat up and get too closed up, you know, and that doesn't happen anymore because I don't like to do more than 2 in a row. I can do 2 on, 1 off, 2 on, 1 off and keep it. And I take a lot of Arnica pellets.
What's that?
It's a homeopathic herbal thing that is these little pellets that come in canisters and it takes down bruising and swelling.
Oh, wow.
And so I figured out that if you do mega doses of this stuff, it just takes all the damage down. Wow. And the next day you're good to go, you know.
Any throat coat tea or stuff like that?
Well, that stuff has never really worked, done anything for me. You know, anything warm. It doesn't have to be throat coat, but.
Right. I always liked it.
Yeah, well, it can't hurt for sure. Yeah. It's definitely good. It's just if you treat it well, it'll treat you well, you know, your voice.
Yeah. So the record's coming out April 29th.
Yeah.
And you're coming to LA. I want to see it. You're doing the El Rey 2 nights, May 9th and 10th.
Right. You got to come say hi.
I got to come say hi. I got to see you. I got to meet you and I got to see you sing because I have not seen you since Saratoga Mountain Winery years and years ago.
Right. Yeah.
But I was, you know, diving down the rabbit hole, watching stuff just recently. You did kind of like a cool storyteller's film that I was enjoying that. It was a kind of like where you're talking about stuff and then singing songs. It was on your YouTube channel. Like somebody's interviewing you in a house and then you sing a song. I don't know. It's up on your channel, but some cool stuff to watch on your, she has a YouTube channel, Ann Wilson YouTube channel. That's got just great.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. That's by Chris Kane. That's called In Focus or something. Or
yeah. That was really cool to watch. I watched it last night, you know?
Yeah. That was cool.
I'm a comedian. Do you watch any comedy these days? Do you watch it on Netflix? Are you into comedy?
Yes, indeed. But I set the bar really high. Like Eddie Izzard is my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm going to check you out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Who else you like? Maria Bamford. I love her. You into any newer comics? Ali Wong?
I don't know the newer ones that much.
Oh, you should dig in. You know,
I will.
Yeah, yeah. I'll send over some for you to watch.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I tend to like the controversial ones.
Oh well, those are the ones I'm naming.
Yeah,
I think it's a lot like music. If you're not saying anything, why do it?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
you know, I really believe that. And congrats on the new record.
Thank you.
Looking forward to seeing you live. What's the set list? Is it new stuff and then a bunch of Heart stuff?
It's a bunch of new stuff, some Heart stuff, maybe 4 or 5 songs from Heart, and then a few covers.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Any Zeppelin?
Yeah, we do one Zeppelin song, or two, actually. And we do Dream On. The Aerosmith song.
Oh, yeah. Did you see Zeppelin?
Well, yes. I saw him about maybe 6 times.
Whoa.
And I was there in 06 in London.
Oh, yeah. I read that you threw your name in the hat for a singer because they were thinking about doing it after that when Robert didn't want to do it. And you just got crickets. I read that. That came across the wire last week.
Yeah. Well, I understand why. Because why would they want to hire somebody that can sound like Robert? You know, I mean, they're going to want to push their boundaries out and not become a caricature of their old band. But at the time, I was really disappointed because I had visions of going up there with Jimmy Page and John Paul and, of course, Jason.
Part of me is so glad that they never did that because I never got to see him. You know, I saw Page Plant and it was unreal. They had that crazy great drummer who passed away.
Yeah.
But God, they were so great as Page Plant. But I wanted John Paul Jones there. But I'm also glad that they never did it because I mean, 06 was unreal.
Yeah, unreal. It was.
And, you know, I could see him doing like one big massive thing like at a Coachella for like, you know, just a giant thing, but you know,
those one-offs are kind of hard though.
Yeah.
Cause usually it takes, after you've been off for a while, it takes 3 or 4 shows or more to really get back to your stride.
Right.
And to really open up. So I can only imagine the courage it took to do that 06 thing.
Oh yeah. Especially after the Live Aid debacle, you know, they really wanted to make sure they had this thing right.
Right.
Man, I heard they rehearsed like 3 months.
Yeah, well, that'd help for sure. Yeah.
Just getting in fighting shape, man.
Yeah.
You were there in 06. What was it like in that room to be in there?
Well, it was kind of like being in a mega church, I guess, because people had come from all over the world and the place was absolutely packed, of course.
Yeah.
And every little sound they made fell on really wide open ears, and just people just loved them. You just feel the vitality of the love in the room. It was almost a spiritual experience in a way.
Greatest band ever.
Yeah,
ever.
Yeah.
And the way they started it, I got goosebumps right now on my arms. It's like, this is the bass player, John Paul Jones. You know, that guy just doing the cool old news thing. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Together, they make the group Led Zeppelin, then dong, gong, gong, gong. You know, I was just like, oh my God. Everything was a home run.
Yeah, yeah. I can still feel my stomach doing somersaults when I think of that.
Well, I tell you what, it was an honor to talk to you today.
Well, thank you for having me.
I can't even tell you how much it meant to me and your music over the years. Your voice is unreal. And everybody hear this new record. The single out right now is Greed, which is super rocking and sounds fantastic. Record comes out April 29th, and she's going out on tour all over. So I'm going to see her in LA at the El Rey, and I cannot wait to see it.
It's going to be nice to meet you and shake your hand.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much. And please stay in touch, man. Get my email. And if I come to Florida or something, I'll have you come down and see some comedy.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Let's stay in touch.
That'd be great. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
I'll see you later. Bye.